This is the Flip Empire Show with Alex Pardo, episode 32.
And then, you know, one of the deals, believe it or not, Alex, we made $2 million on that one house. $2 million profit on one house.
That's probably, was this a wholesale? Was this a fix and flip? I mean, what kind of?
No, this was a, so let me tell you how you make $2 million on one house.
Yeah, please do. Like, let's kind of do a mini case study here because I didn't even know you were going to talk about this, but I want to hear all about it.
Welcome to the Flip Empire Show, bringing you the interviews, strategies, and insights for smart real estate investors. Prepare to dive into the minds of real estate's heavy hitters and gain the cutting-edge expertise you need to scale and grow your real estate empire. Your success and freedom starts now with your host, Alex Pardo.
Hey, what's going on? Alex Pardo with another masterclass here at the Flip Empire Show. I have Jason Boozy on the phone here. And before I bring him on, I just want to kind of set the table for what you're about to hear over the course of the next 30, 35 minutes or so. You know, as you guys know, if you've been joining me here on the Flip Empire Show, my goal is to try to bring the best of the best to share their knowledge, their strategies, tips, ticks, and techniques that are working for them in their market so that hopefully you guys take action, implement what you you listen and you learn on the show and apply it in your business so that you can start to see immediate results. And so my game plan is to try to cover some different topics and some different areas within real estate investing so that you know what's out there and you can focus on one particular strategy. And before I bring Jason on the phone here, a mutual friend of ours, Chris Chico, actually introduced me to Jason. And we're part of the of a Facebook group called Wholesaling Houses Full Time. And Jason, you don't know this, but throughout the last 3, 4, 5 months, I've been noticing your name pop up more and more in Facebook as somebody who's, you know, constantly answering questions, contributing to the forum. And I could just tell from afar that Jason was somebody operating at a high level and that, you know, this is somebody that knows what they're doing in this business. So Chris Chico put us in contact. We've been, you know, talking over the course of the last few weeks, and I invited him to jump on the show because we haven't covered high-end wholesaling, and that's actually what Jason focuses on and what he's an expert in the San Francisco Bay Area. And if any of you guys, you know anything about what the market is doing across the country, San Francisco has been one of the hottest markets for a while. And Jason is somebody who consistently, I mean, he's been doing this since 2005, and he's consistently earning seven figures a year in this business, primarily wholesaling high-end properties and also rehabbing and doing some new construction. So having said all that, I just wanted to kind of like lay the groundwork for what we're going to cover on today's masterclass, which is high-end wholesaling. So Jason, man, I appreciate you you coming on.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely, man. So listen, let's just jump right into it here. But before we get into kind of the nuts and bolts of high-end wholesaling and how you've been able to, you know, cash six-figure checks with every deal, most deals that you do, kind of give us a brief overview of what your business looks like today. Because obviously, I know you got started in 2005, and your business has probably evolved throughout the year. So what does your business look like today?
Well, I've been for the last few years pretty consistently doing about 1.5 deals per month. I do rehabs, I do double closing, and I do wholesaling.
Okay.
And like you said, on most deals, I make six figures. If not, I usually make close to it. So my average is around that. And I did 18 deals last year, 17 the year before, 17 the year before that. I've been about 10 or 11 right now.
Okay.
In 2016. So, and we're in July. So as you can see, pretty consistently about 1.5 per month. I'm actually probably going to do things to step that up. But right now what happens is I look at a lot of leads every month. What I say is it's like a funnel. You know, you start with 3 or 4 leads a day. That becomes about 100 leads a month. Mm-hmm. As you and I and anybody in this business knows, most leads just don't make sense. They're garbage. They're overpriced.
That's right.
They want too much. The deal just doesn't make sense. Otherwise, this would be the easiest job in the world. Most leads, you just got to look at them and you say, move on. Out of those 100 leads a month, maybe I'm making offers on around 10, and I'm closing about 1.5.
Okay. So you actually, that's a perfect segue. Let's jump into the marketing part of it first before we get into, like, you know, the glitz and glamour of high-end wholesaling. And I know you've been cashing some big checks. How are you, what are some of your best strategies for generating leads into your funnel right now?
Right. So basically 95% of my leads come either from networking with agents or from direct mail. I do a lot of both. I do everything that I do is off market. I don't buy properties once they're listed on the MLS. I'm no longer interested. Some people don't get it. But in my market, that's like a big turnoff for my buyers. People can see, oh, it was advertised for this much. Now, I know people that do that successfully, so I don't want to say that won't work for anybody. Mm-hmm. But that's just kind of how, since I started in 2005, I've looked for off-market properties. And I've basically been using these same strategies from the very beginning. Occasionally, I get a deal from a wholesaler. Occasionally, I'll get a deal from a personal referral. Once in a while, I'll get a deal from a door knocker. We can talk about that a little bit.
Yeah.
But 95%, it's either direct mail or it's from an agent. But when it is from an agent, it's not on the market yet. It's called a pocket listing.
Pocket listing.
It's not yet being listed.
Yep, exactly. And when it comes to the direct mail, because we're here in South Florida and our, we're in a pretty hot market, maybe not as hot as San Francisco, but one of the things that we find is that it's not uncommon that when our acquisitions manager goes and meets with a seller, that seller has 20, 30, direct mail pieces on their kitchen counter. And what's funny is that a lot of them look the same, yellow, white postcards. Are you doing anything in particular to kind of cut through the clutter, or for you, is it just more volume in terms of the direct mail?
Well, a little bit of both. I mean, I definitely do a lot of volume. Well, what I consider a lot of volume, some people do a lot more than me. I do about 5,000 letters a month. I mean, I know people doing 20,000 cards a month. So, depending, for most people, I'd say 5,000 is more than what most investors are doing. But one of the things that I'm actually working on now that you just alluded to a second ago is getting more of a team together, like acquisition people. Right now, I'm sort of a one-man show, and I've been able to do seven figures as a one-man show, but I could probably double, triple, or more my business just by building like a team where I'm not the one constantly going to meet with the sellers. So that's kind of a work in process. I mean, we both know Sean Terry and all about his team.
Oh, yeah.
I went to the Mark Evans event as well, and he's another heavy hitter that's got a great team out there. But right now I'm pretty much a one-man show. But what I do a little bit that separates me in the direct mail is, you see, you have a lot of people going after, like, let's say the distress situation, whether it's pre-foreclosures or the short sales or all that. I don't target those so much because I feel like it is saturated. Mm-hmm. So I go after something that they may be a little bit less motivated, quote unquote, but they're not getting as much mail. I just go after zip codes that I like and people that have owned their home for a long time.
Okay.
And or inherited. So, there's ways to do that here in California that might not work in other states, like based on the low property tax rate. It tells you they've either owned their home a long time if they have a low property tax or that they inherit it. If you think about it, those are people that, they have a lot of equity and they're likely to sell. And then I go after zip codes that are hot. We have different areas and that may change, every couple of years, that are very hot. So they're not getting as much direct mail as, let's say, somebody in pre-foreclosure. I remember going to see a lady that was in pre-foreclosure, and you speak Spanish, right?
I do, yes. Yeah.
And she only spoke Spanish. I had to bring my brother in because he's pretty fluent to translate for me. And I said, are you getting a lot of mail? And she picked up this big pile of mail with both hands, and she said, that's just from this week.
Wow. I believe it. I believe
it. And, they're getting so much. So, you can get really lucky once in a while, be the needle in the haystack. If I was going to go after pre-foreclosure, I'll tell you what I would do. I would do something different than what everybody's doing. So if everybody's going after something, you can still get deals, but you better do something to differentiate yourself. Like if I was doing pre-foreclosures, I would either send somebody out there to door knock, because that's a lot harder to ignore than a letter, have somebody knock on their door, or I would maybe send like a priority mail or a FedEx envelope that they have to sign for that's really going to stick out and not just another letter or another postcard. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Yeah. Because when you send one of those oversized priority envelopes, nine out of 10 times, if not 10 out of 10, a homeowner is going to open it. Nobody's just going to toss that in the trash.
Yeah. It's hard to ignore. You can also send like a box of cookies. I know somebody, when I was at the Sean Terry Can't Clothier event, Can't Clothier, right?
I do. Yeah, absolutely.
And he had this video card where it would actually play a video. It was like almost a DVD, miniature DVD player embedded within this greeting card that would play a video. And you can buy them, I don't know the company, but you can look it up. But it was like $10 each from China. So they're not cheap. But if you have, you know, if you figure like one out, you know, they really get noticed, and one out of 100, let's say, gets you a deal, that's still worth it.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, and you know, you mentioned door knocking, and that's actually something I also got started in 2005, and that's one of the things I started doing aside from direct mail. And it's funny because, you know, especially locally here, I'm sure there's a few people out there that still door knock, but I don't personally know anybody that's out there door knocking. And to me, that screams opportunity. And I think part of the reason, Jason, is because, you know, in my opinion, I think a lot of people associate a high, you know, level of pain, quote unquote, to go door knock. It's very uncomfortable. And so that represents an opportunity, especially if you're getting started and you might not have a budget to send out, you know, 5,000 mailers a month. Go out there and start door knocking, you know, speak to the postal workers, you know, network with neighbors. And if you start turning off enough stones, in my opinion, you know, that's where the good things happen.
Well, it's a huge opportunity. The problem is there's very few people willing to do it and to do it consistently. I've gotten about four or five deals. I'm too lazy to do it myself, or intimidated, or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
So I can't really blame other people for not wanting to. But I've had people do it for me, and I said, you know, you get me a deal from this, like a lead that actually closes, and I'll give you $10,000. And then, you know, one of the deals, believe it or not, Alex, we made $2 million on that one house. $2 million profit on one house.
That's probably, was this a wholesale? Was this a fix and flip? I mean, what kind of?
No, this was a, so let me tell you how you make $2 million on one house.
Yeah, please do. Let's kind of do a mini case study here, because I didn't even know you were going to talk about this, but I want to hear all about it.
Well, people are like in disbelief. How could I can a guy make $2 million on one house? Well, this is in a neighborhood in Silicon Valley where it's called Palo Alto, where houses are selling, new homes are selling for between $4 to $5 million.
Okay.
So what we did is we bought an old house, and the only way we got to it was from a door knocker, a friend of mine who came up, door knocked, and I said, get me a deal, I'll give you $10,000, and I'm paying his expenses. Meanwhile, gets me the lead, I go meet with the sellers. It's over several months until they finally sign and we close. We buy the house for $1,480,000.
Okay.
Just call it 1.5, but $1,480,000 is what it ended up being.
How did you build, before you keep going, Jason, how did you fund that deal?
We did it as a family, so we each put in some money. I did it with family members. I didn't get to keep the whole $2 million because I split it with a couple family members. The total profit was $2 million. So we bought it for $1,480,000, and then we built a new house that was about 3,600 square feet. And the market was so friggin' hot. This is 2013, I believe, when we sold it. Got the lead in 2012, sold it in 2013, because it takes about a year to build a new house around here. Mm-hmm. You do about 6 months to get your plans and your permits, and then 6 months more for the actual construction. So altogether, you're talking about a year. The market was so hot, we got $4.5 million for that house.
Wow.
And that's how, after cost of construction, the acquisition, of course, paying commissions and all that, we netted $2 million.
You take the cake. Of my, 10 years in this business, that's the biggest profit I've actually connected with someone that they've done on a deal, like net. So that's, I mean, hats off to you, because that's insane.
Well, you know, there was a while here that there was a pretty regular way to make $1 million on a house, is just to buy the old ones and then build new ones. And then it got, you know, got a little bit more competitive right now. And now there's, you know, certain things that you could still do it. But for quite a few years, it was like you made $1 million. And ours was $2 million because it was a bigger house and the market kept going up. And I have partners that I basically, not even partners, I wholesale the house, and I made $35,000 and they made $2 million. So I've been on the other side of that too. So I've seen it happen actually like quite a few times. If you look in the higher end areas, especially maybe in Florida as well, but I mean, I know this market better here in the Bay Area and in Southern California, you'll see that, you know, it may not happen every day, but it's not uncommon, you know, in the high end areas that somebody, a builder of a luxury home, made like $1 million, $2 million or more.
Yeah, I believe it, especially out there in like California. You know, two things jump out at me, Jason, kind of your story and getting to know you a little better. Two things are impressive. I find impressive anyways. Number one, that you've consistently built a 7-figure a year business by yourself. So that's, I can't imagine, you know, what you're going to do. And I look forward to kind of seeing, you know, how your business grows once you start adding people to your team. So that in and of itself is extremely impressive. And number two, you know, you're one of the few people that I've connected with. Most people, you know, whether it's brag or they talk about how they do 100, 200 houses a year, which is great. That's fantastic. But it's based on volume, you know, so they might make 10, 15, 20 grand a deal and they're doing all these deals. But that requires a team, systems, and infrastructure, which is great, but that takes a while to build. You're not necessarily doing it on volume. You're just doing it on, I mean, you're doing what, 18, 20 deals a year, and you're making seven figures. So I find that impressive. Now, if I'm kind of putting myself in the shoes of somebody listening in, you know, I might, if I was a cynic or if I was skeptical, I would say, oh, that's because he's in San Francisco and what the average house is, I'm guessing what, $500,000? I mean, what's the average?
More like a million these days.
There you go. But I think, you know, some of the information you're going to share with us here, I think, you know, you have to kind of have a little bit of a mind shift. If you're listening in, it's not so much about the market, although that definitely helps. I think if you take some of the strategies we're going to share with you, you can still make more on a wholesale transaction than you normally would make. So that kind of leads me into the next question. Now that we've kind of talked about what you're doing from a marketing standpoint, what are some of the things that wholesalers can do to start earning more on their wholesale transactions, whether they're in Miami like I am or whether somebody is in Dallas, Texas?
So the biggest thing for me that took me from where I was, which was six figures, which, you know, it's not bad, to seven figures. 2013 was the first year I hit seven figures. And meaning, you know, making $1 million or more. And I've been doing it and it's been growing every year since then. But the biggest thing for me was double closing. That was really like the one key, because what happened is I was getting these wholesale fees and they were $25,000 fees, mm-hmm. which a lot of people are saying, okay, that's not bad. But remember that these are on $1 million homes. This is not making a 25K fee on a $100,000 house.
Yeah, so it's all relative.
So, Yeah. So, I mean, it wasn't really that great relative to the price of the home. I was leaving a lot of money on the table. And then what happened was I started actually double closing, meaning I would close in my name and then I would have either a buyer lined up or just know that it's like there's no question that this deal is like a killer deal. I did all my homework. I checked every comp. I did everything. And then put it on the market or blast it out. So I don't, when I say double closing, I don't necessarily mean you're closing to a seller the same day. I just mean that you're closing in your name. You actually become the owner of the property mm-hmm. and then you sell it. And doing that as opposed to wholesaling, for me at least, was a huge thing. I'll give you an example. I had a house that I called, the owner said, my mom wants to sell her house. And I said, okay, yeah, I'm interested. She said, you know, these houses are worth $1.5 million. And in my head, I said, no, I know they're worth at least $2 million. Of course, I'm not going to tell her that.
Yeah, right.
So, and I knew it's in a super hot market and I'm going to sell that to developers so easy. So we signed for 1.5. I didn't even negotiate with her. I gave her the price she wanted. Within a week, and it was, you know, it could have been the next day, but I was talking to a couple other people, but within a week I had it signed to be sold for $2 million. So, but they had to get a loan, but I'd already closed. I got a private money loan for 1.5. Okay. I sold it within days for $2 million. That's $500,000 spread minus just, you know, some minor closing costs, no commission even. There was no agents involved. The buyer was somebody from my own network. Closed on it, sold it for $2 million. Now, there's no way in hell that person would have given me a $500,000 check as an assignment fee.
Yeah.
They would have been kicking and screaming and be like, no way, you're being greedy. That's crazy. I'll give you $100,000. And I can't find, they can't finance that. They ended up getting a loan. Now, what most wholesalers do is they limit themselves to cash buyers. Well, that's fine, I guess, if you're selling $30,000, $40,000 houses. If you're in the higher, like six-figure houses, seven-figure houses, like in my market and in your market, mm-hmm. that's not going to work. I mean, well, it could work. You could find cash buyers. Let me rephrase that. But you're leaving out a lot of potential buyers by saying, I don't want anybody who needs a loan to buy a $1 million house. I only want the cash buyer. Then you're going to get the low-balling investors.
Yeah.
I want to sell. I want to buy wholesale. I want to sell at retail. So what I've been doing is I've been closing in my name. Here's my thing. And you might want to adjust this based on your market. But here's my thing. If I'm like very confident of $100,000 profit or more, I will actually close on the deal and then I will sell it. I'm not going to wholesale it. Now, the ones I wholesale are the ones I'm not so sure about, or the ones that are more for like a retail buyer, like I got one now I'm trying to do. The ones I'm not confident it's a good enough deal for me to close, I will wholesale. When I'm confident there's $100,000 or more in profit, like I can buy, let's say, at 800 and sell it as is for 1.1, or I can buy it $1,200,000 and sell as is for 1.5. I'm not talking ARV, Alex. I'm not talking ARV here. I'm talking about selling it in the same exact condition. So let me give you a quick example. Last year I did 18 transactions, okay? I only rehabbed 3 houses. So out of 18, I only rehabbed 3. The other 15, about half of them I wholesaled, just assignment, never closed. The other half I actually closed and immediately resold as is. Only 3 out of 18 were rehabs.
Wow. Wow. So you're saying, so you did 18, 3 were rehabs, and you said what, roughly 7 or 8 you wholesaled. The other 7 or 8 were the ones where you actually closed on it. And yes. Then you, what did you do to sell it? Did you put it back out on the MLS, or how did you find the retail buyer?
So usually from my network of either investors or agents, but a few times on MLS.
Okay.
But the key thing is that you don't rehab it. You close and then you sell it as is. Because once you rehab it, that's no longer a double close. That's a rehab. But once you wholesale the contract, that's a wholesale. The issue with wholesaling, and wholesaling can be great. I'm not knocking it. I'm still doing it to this day. And that's how I started. That's all I did for years. But the challenge with wholesaling is that you're sort of limiting your buyer pool. You're limiting how much people will pay you. You're limiting yourself usually to cash buyers. You're limiting yourself that, you know, you have a limited amount of time. Somebody can potentially go around you. I mean, hopefully this doesn't happen too often, but somebody can potentially go around you to the homeowner. You know, weird things can happen when you're wholesaling because you don't actually own the property. Once you're the owner, you can do whatever the heck you want, you know, do whatever the heck you want. So once I'm the owner, I'm not stressed out anymore. I'm not sweating buckets that I got to get it done this week because my contingencies are over. I'm not sweating, oh, they might go and talk to the seller. They might do this. Oh, the house is still occupied. Once I own it, you know, I can blast it out. I can put it on MLS. Those are things I can't do when I'm wholesaling. I can get like a regular buyer. I can tell the whole world about it. I can do all these things. So I'm probably going to make more money if I double close. Now, the flip side of it, just no pun intended, but the other side of it, just to be cautious here, you want to make sure that you're getting a really good deal if you're going to double close.
Right.
Because, you know, you're also going to pay more in closing costs and so on. That. But I made $500,000 in a week by double closing. That would have never happened wholesaling. Now, last year, I made $400,000 in a week double closing. Now, typically, I don't make $400,000 or $500,000. I put this in quote, only make about $100,000 to $200,000 on most deals that are double closed. But I think a lot of people would be happy with that too.
Man, Jason, it's funny, man, because a lot of people I talk to, especially when they're getting started, and by no means is this a knock. This is, you know, it's all relative, right? And people come from different walks of life and people are in different financial situations. But a lot of people I talk to, they'd be extremely happy if they can make $100,000 to $150,000 a year wholesaling real estate, and which allows them to quit their job. So, I mean, this is a game changer. And actually, it's eye popping for me, Jason, because, you know, just to be transparent with everybody listening, you know, last year we did 40 something wholesale deals, and every single one of those was a cash buyer. And so even myself, as I'm listening to you speak, Jason, I'm kind of, you know, my mind is opening up to the possibility of closing on some of these transactions. And I can already think of 5-10 of them that I think would have been perfect, where maybe the house needed 10-15 grand, which is nothing, and I could have easily sold it as is by putting it back out on the MLS or going to my network and making a lot more.
Well, I talked to another investor here who's actually very successful, and I was telling him about my strategy, how I left to double close most of my deals, and it just kind of blew him away because he was saying, you know, I was just looking at every project as a rehab, and he's like a rehabber. And he's like, if it didn't make sense to rehab, if it didn't really need anything, but it was a good deal, I would sometimes pass it up because it wasn't a rehab. And I was like blown away by that. And he said, but now that you mention it, like, you know, some deals I know that I could have just bought without doing all the work. And I was looking at ARV and how much I put in and how much I would get out. I could have just bought and sold probably the next day and made $100,000.
Yeah.
And I was like, dude, why were you not doing those deals? He's like, I don't know. I was just thinking as a rehabber. And I think that's the problem as real estate investors. And this is my mistake from 2005 when I got started till 2010. All I did was wholesale. And when I say wholesale, I'm not talking about double closing. All I was doing was selling the contract. Mm-hmm. And usually I would get paid up front. So I was pretty happy. I'd find a deal, lock it up, get it like a $25,000 to $30,000 check was my average, somewhere around there. And that's all I did, though, from 2005 till 2010. Well, I mean, I was making good money for most of that period. It hurt a little bit during the downturn, but I was not making seven figures or anywhere near it. I was making like a couple hundred thousand a year, and I was happy with that, but I was not making seven figures till I started double closing and rehabbing. And here's the problem. I was a wholesaler. My friend was a rehabber. The reality is we're not wholesalers. We're not rehabbers. We're not double closers. We're real estate investors. Those are all strategies. And as real estate investors, we should use whichever strategy makes the most sense on that particular deal. Whether it's rehabbing, that's fine. If it's wholesaling, that's fine. If it's double closing, that's great. Like whatever it is, we're investors. If we put ourselves in boxes as, oh, I'm a wholesaler or I'm a rehabber or I'm a double closer, then we're limiting our opportunities because we're just looking at things through that lens. We should be investors and use the best tool for the particular deal.
That's so true, man. No, that's I'm glad that you shared your perspective on that because I agree with you. And I think sometimes, you know, wholesalers in particular, I've noticed tend to box themselves into a corner. And I've been guilty of this in the past. So I understand where people kind of come with this. But I'm glad that you shared that. A couple of quick follow-up questions for you because I want to do a little bit more of a deep dive in this area here. I'm assuming that these are houses that are not like gutted, you know, because you said that you're double closing, so you're closing on it, you're selling it as is, but I'm assuming these are houses that can be financed, right? So the condition is not so bad that a bank won't give a loan on it.
Right. I mean, they're usually decent, you know, they've just been lived in by for 30, 40 years, haven't been upgraded in most cases. It's just something that, you know, think about like an older person owns and hasn't remodeled since the 70s, but they're perfectly livable in most cases. I mean, if we have fire damage, I know people do those type of houses. That you probably do need a cash buyer if you're selling a fire damage houses, but most of the inventory that I see is not like that.
Okay. Now, let me ask you this, Jason, to avoid the risk of somebody going out and getting hard money or getting private money or securing financing to be able to actually close on it and then have the freedom to, you know, put it on the MLS, market the property however they want. How do you go about analyzing the deal so that you know that if you're going to go ahead and close on this thing with your cash or with somebody's financing, you know, with 100% certainty, if that's even possible, that you're going to get it sold to a retail buyer?
You know what I do that's a little bit different is I kind of, and I line up a buyer. I try to line up a buyer before I even close, and I put feelers out there to agents, and I say, hey, this deal, let's say I'm getting it for $800,000, okay? And I know for some parts of the country you might want to take a zero off this, but that's a pretty median price point in my market, like I said, around $1 million or so. Mm-hmm. So let's say I'm getting it for $800,000. I'm going to talk to a couple agents I know and say, hey, what do you think this is worth? And, you know, they can give me their opinion, but I'm also might say, can you get me a buyer for this property at $950,000 and I'll pay you 5%. Okay. So now I'm like, you know, there's at least $100,000 spread. Mm-hmm. And they're going to maybe take people out there or talk to their buyers about it and tell me yes or no. So I'll do that typically once I'm in contract after I've already done the preliminary research on the comps and so on. So I had a deal last month. And I was getting it for about $1.3 million. Mm-hmm. And the comps were kind of all over the place. They were all higher than that, but some of them were only like 1.4. And I mean, that's not really enough of a spread to make money. But some of them were going up to like 1.6, 1.7. It was just kind of hard to tell. So I sent it out to an agent, a couple agents I know, and they took buyers there. And they weren't really getting any bites. And, you know, I was marking it up enough for me to make a profit and for them to get paid a commission. And they weren't really getting any bites on it. So I ended up backing out of the deal. Because if they said, yes, my client likes it, they want it, what I would have done is either double close and sold to their client or just said, okay, let's figure it out and then close and maybe listed with them or maybe just put it on the market and gave them the opportunity to bring the buyer. I wasn't obligated to bring them the buyer, but the feedback of the actual buyers out there, you can get that without closing. I remember the first deal that I closed on. Can I tell you a quick story?
Yeah, please do.
The first deal I closed on was only $200,000, which in hindsight looks like nothing to me. But I was, this was like 5-6 years ago. This was the first deal because I'd just been doing real estate, but only been wholesaling. And when it was, I guess, 2011, and it was actually closing a deal all by myself, I was kind of nervous about it. $200,000 in hindsight doesn't look like a lot, but at that time it was most of the money that I had saved.
Yeah.
And I was really nervous, and it looked like a good deal. So I looked at the comps. The comps were saying this is a good deal. Then the next thing I did is I actually put an ad. I called agents, and they said, oh, yeah, that's worth at least like $250,000, and you're getting it for $200,000. That's a good deal. It was actually a short sale that got approved by the bank for $200,000. And then I put an ad on Craigslist, and I put actual pictures of the property, and I put everything except because it was a condo, so it was in the complex. I just put the street. I didn't put the actual unit number.
Okay.
But they're all identical anyway, and I put the size and I put photos. And I wanted to see, you know, by putting it on Craigslist for sale, am I going to get, you know, like real responses and not, hey, I'm a Nigerian prince and I'll send you a cashier check for this yeah. house. Just right, send, right. wire me back the difference. I wanted to see if I'm getting like real responses like, hey, we're a couple and we've been renting in the area, but we just had a baby. And we need a bigger place. When can we see it? Your place looks nice. We have 25% to put down. Would that work? I wanted to see if I could get, you know, real responses. So I put it out there, and I got over 20 responses. And, you know, 99% of them seemed legitimate. So that gave me – and I put it out there at like $250,000. Like I was buying it for $200,000, right? So I bumped up the price. I put it on Craigslist with the photos, with the street name, with the real description of it, and I wanted to see am I getting real demand.
And the after repaired value on this property was about $250,000, Jason?
Well, I bought it – I was buying it for $200,000. I got a short sale approval for $200,000.
Right.
So I wanted, I wanted to make a profit. So, and if I knew if I sold it, I'd probably have to pay commission. So I was bumping it up for $250,000 on Craigslist. I was buying it for $200,000 and I advertised it on Craigslist for $250,000. And I wanted to see, am I getting real response? And when I got about 20 responses that seemed legitimate, that gave me after already checking the comps and after talking to agents, it was like the final step that I needed to give me the confidence to just go ahead and pull the trigger. Because $200,000 was making me nervous that I'm, you know, putting my own money. Because I was so used to being a wholesaler that it was like a mental block. I had to get rid of the mental block to actually close. And that's a very important thing in life. Sometimes we don't do things, not because we can't physically, but we have this mental block, like to go to the next level. You know, like, mm-hmm. like I have kind of a mental block right now. I'll be perfectly honest with you. I kind of have a mental block about hiring people and building a team. And that's why I've been like a one-man show. Now, I've been a very successful one-man show, but I have this mental block about, oh, if I hire people, they'll screw me or they'll be flakes, because I've dealt with people like that.
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh, I'll just do everything myself and I can still make like over $1 million a year doing everything myself. So I got to get rid of that mental block because I've seen how people can be really successful once they build a team. Mm-hmm. I mean, not that I'm not successful now, but I could probably triple my income if I do it right.
Easily.
So yeah, for sure. So, but we have mental blocks in life. So I had this mental block after 5-6 years of being a wholesaler to actually close in my name, even though it was, and I'm saying this quote unquote, only $200,000, because I told you, Alex, most deals here, the average price is $1 million here in the Bay Area. That was an only $200,000 condo. So I had to take all these steps to give myself the extra assurance. So I looked at the comps, it looked good. I talked to agents. They all said, oh, it's a great deal at $200,000. But then I took that extra step of putting on Craigslist and seeing if I get real response and getting over 20 real responses at $250,000 when I was buying it for $200,000 validated me. I went ahead, I bought the property. You know what happened? We listed it. Guess what we sold it for?
What's that?
$320,000.
Well, and you were asking $250,000?
I wasn't asking I was asking $250,000 on Craigslist, but when we actually listed it, my agent actually listed it at like $270,000. And I was like, what? That's too high. We just bought it for $200,000. He's like, no, trust me, the market's on fire.
It got bid up to $320,000?
I sold it $320,000 cash to a cash buyer.
Wow.
And I mean, the market was on fire. I mean, again, timing was great, but I bought it for $200,000 as a short sale. I sold it right away for $320,000. My net after commission was over $100,000. And I would have never made that wholesaling. Actually, I think I had somebody offer me like 15K on it. I would have never made like, so the way I'm able to make seven figures, as I string a bunch of six figure deals together, you get 100 here, 200 here, 300 here, 100 again, you know, you do that throughout the year, yeah, and you're going to be in a seven figure year. You get those $15,000-$20,000 checks. Man, you got to be doing some, I know people do, some people make seven figures with small checks, but they got to be doing a ton of volume.
Yeah, you have to have a hell of a system and a hell of a team to be able to, you know, if your average profit per transaction is 15, 20 grand, do the math, to get to seven figures, I mean, you have to have quite an operation running and a whole lot of marketing and overhead, I'm going to add, to get to that point.
And nothing wrong with that. It's just like, that's, you're not going to do that as a one-man show.
Yeah. Right, right. So listen, man, this has been eye-popping even for me. So I hopefully, if you're listening in, you know, this is content that you're enjoying. And one of the things, Jason, that we want to wrap up here with on the show is let's try to like put a bow tie in our conversation. And if you were going to leave people with the best piece of advice you can give them, as it relates to everything you've covered in the last, 35 minutes or so, what's that one piece of advice you can give people that if they take action on it, implement it in their business, they can start to see bigger paydays in their business?
Well, definitely what I said about you have to look at yourself as an investor and not a rehabber or a wholesaler or a double closer or any of those things. You have to look at yourself as an investor and just choose whichever strategy is best for that deal. I left literally millions of dollars on the table by thinking of myself as a wholesaler, by being only a wholesaler and not using other strategies. I had, finally one day it hit me because I was splitting a $25,000 fee with a friend and I made 12, so that's 12,500. And then the person rehabbed it, they made 400K. That's around that time it started hitting me that, wait, I'm leaving way too much money on the table because all I'm doing is this one strategy. So make sure as an investor, you're thinking of yourself as an investor, not as a wholesaler, not as a rehabber, not as anything else. And you're just realizing these are tools and I need to use the best tool. The other piece of advice that's just as important is you have to use massive and consistent effort. You can't like once in a while send out a couple thousand letters, and you can't send like 100 letters every month and expect to get, or cards every month and expect to get something. You need to do it massively, meaning sending out thousands and thousands, and you need to do it consistently. I'm talking now about direct mail, but that also applies to anything. If you're talking to agents, don't go and talk to three or four agents and think they're going to bring you like a bunch of deals. Hundreds of agents know who I am. And because I've planted those seeds, I sometimes get deals from agents I haven't heard from like in a year. I sometimes get calls from people I sent a letter to 2 years ago. You know, you're planting seeds and you never know when they're going to bear fruit. You're just consistently and massively doing that. So massive and consistent effort. Like somebody who sends 50 letters every month is doing it consistently, but not massively. Somebody who's sending 10,000 letters, but then not doing it again for another year, they're doing it massively, but not consistently. Do it massively and consistently, and you start seeing results. And then when you get those leads, make sure you're using the best strategy, the best approach, whether it's wholesaling, rehabbing, double closing. Again, I don't close on anything in my name unless I'm confident it's $100,000 profit or more. Mm-hmm. You can change those numbers depending on your market. The others, I just try to wholesale out.
I love it, man. No, that's extremely powerful, man. That's a huge takeaway. So I think that's going to resonate with a lot of people listening in. So Jason, man, definitely appreciate the time. Where can, if anybody wants to connect with you, where can people reach out to you?
They can send me an email. It's JAYRE, like real estate, 01@gmail.com. That's JAYRE01@gmail.com. There's also a Facebook group called Living the Dream. They can check out and be happy to interact with them there too.
Awesome, buddy. Awesome. Well, hey man, listen, I know you and I will stay in contact. If I can do anything to help you in your business, anything to do with hiring or whatever, you know, I'm happy to help however I can. And, yeah, man, I appreciate the time. I think people are really, really going to get a lot of value out of this content. So appreciate it, Jason.
Thanks a lot, Alex.
All right. Have a great one.
That's all for this episode of the Flip Empire Show. But we have you covered with even more expertise and resources on our website. Text EMPIRE to 67076 or head over to flipempire.com to join the newsletter and gain free instant access to our video module training course called 5 Ways to Scale Your Real Estate Wholesaling Business to 6 Figures in 6 Months or Less. For more interviews, strategies, and insights for the smart real estate investor, we'll catch you next time here on the Flip Empire Show.